Hello, everyone. My name is Maggie Wilkins. I'm the state field coordinator with the League of Education Voters. Thank you for joining us today. This is the third webinar in our series of lunchtime webinars on effective teachers and principals. It's also our last webinar of 2013. We're happy to announce we'll continue to bring you lunchtime webinars in the new year, and for the months of January and February, we're offering webinars once per week on the most pressing issues in Olympia, so find our sign-up at educationvoters.org to register. Our goal for today's webinar is to bring you succinct info sessions at the lunch hour on some of LEV's top education priorities. We've also worked to create these webinars in a fashion that helps build a base of knowledge for advocacy. Each topic we've selected includes three presentations. The first of the three in each series will engage advocates on a personal level. We're hoping to provide some tangible skills for you and your young person to help navigate the public school system. The second presentation in the series helps put context to the issue. Many of the barriers we face in schools as individuals are actually quite common to parents, guardians, and families, and through sharing and building relationships, we help empower ourselves to keep advocating. The third webinar in the series will bring you a bright spot, or an example of best practices. In advocacy and social change, it's important to share your vision that outlines how you think schools should be and not merely what we believe is unjust. The format is pretty simple. We're going to dive right into a presentation from our guest, and then we'll wrap up with a few minutes early so our presenter can answer questions from the audience. You'll notice we have a chat function on the left-hand side of the webinar. This is a space for you to pose questions to the presenter. Please remember to be respectful, as all this information is public and will be archived on our website for later access. Lastly, visit our webpage at www.educationvoters.org in order to view the full list of past and future webinars. Today, we'll hear a presentation from Principal Whitney Meisner of Chemicum High School. Whitney has worked in education for over 20 years and will be sharing her thoughts and practices today on the implementation of student growth measures in Washington's teacher evaluation frameworks. Thanks for joining us today, Principal Meisner. Please take it away.
Thank you very much, and I'm really honored to be able to share some information with you today and really do welcome your questions. So please know we will save some time at the end so that I can respond to them as best I can. There's just a little bit about me. I have been working in education in Washington for 22 years as a teacher, assistant principal, and principal. I'm Washington born and bred. I received my bachelor's degree from University of Washington, my master's from Central, and my doctoral degree from SPU. And most recently, I've worked the last 2 years as a CEL, Center for Educational Leadership Framework Trainer, as we work to implement this new evaluation system. So I get a lot of questions from parents and community members trying to understand the significance of the evaluation system, particularly this element called student growth. And the best thing that I can do to start with is to help define that and give that some context. Student growth is not exactly the same thing as student achievement. Student achievement is defined as student knowledge assessed at one point in time. So when you see test scores published in the paper or on websites, that's usually talking about student achievement because it's telling us how kids did on one test on one day. Student growth, however, is the change in student achievement over time. Another way we like to think about that is student growth is student learning. In schools, we are, of course, in the business of teaching and learning, and we need to be better at explaining how we know students are learning in our classrooms. It also needs to be better understood that achievement scores are a measure of performance on one day, whereas learning can be demonstrated in a variety of ways. Richard and Rebecca Dufour, along with their colleagues at Solution Tree, ask four questions that lend themselves well to the conversation. The four questions, and any of you who have worked with PLC work have probably heard these questions before, but these are questions that we continually need to ask ourselves. One is, what do we want our students to learn? We can be asking that about a single class during an instructional unit or throughout the semester. I'm going to pause for just a moment. I'm seeing that other people are having a little bit of difficulty viewing the webinar, so I'm going to pause for just a moment. Okay. So I want to start again. There are four questions that we can ask. One is, what do we want students to learn? Two is, how will we know that students have learned it? Three, what will we do for students who do not learn it? And four, what will we do for students who already know? And those are four questions that we need to ask continually. So again, if we think about student growth goals, and for those of you who may or may not know, student growth is a required component of all teacher and principal evaluations in our state now. And so every year, principals and teachers across our state have to be evaluated and on demonstrated evidence that students are learning in our classrooms and our schools. So as we've worked to implement that in our system, what we've tried to express to teachers and to staff members is that student growth goals should be connected to what we call the instructional core. And the instructional core consists of three elements. The first is the curriculum. One way that we can do that is to consistently assess how are we increasing the level and complexity of content that we are asking students to learn. In other words, how do we avoid making sure that students are just working at the information level or the recall level and rather grappling with more complex issues? The second element is the teacher role. Of course, if we work on increasing the skills, knowledge, and expertise of the teacher, we would hope that the end result would be that that student learning is improved. The third element that has been the most fun, I think, of all of the work we've done with student growth is working with the role of the student, and that is changing the role of the student as learner to be more involved with their own education, more empowered to take ownership of their learning, and to give them a variety of ways to demonstrate their knowledge and understanding. The reality is, if we work on connecting the content, the role of the teacher, the role of the student, and improving all three at the same time, that is when we have the best chance of improving student learning, regardless of the context of the student's background or the educational experience they've had up to that point. This visual is courtesy of the University of Washington and the Public Education Leadership Project with Childress, Elmore, Grossman, and King at Harvard. And it gives you a visual example of that instructional core that I was just describing. And you can see that all three are interdependent, the content, the teacher, and the student. So then we get into the idea of, what does this really mean for teachers, what does it mean for students, and how does it connect to evaluation? Again, I come back to student growth goals are student learning goals, and we need to get better in education at explaining and providing evidence that our students are learning in our classrooms and schools. So as I have worked with teachers this year to write their effective student learning goals, we start with these kind of ideas. The first is they should connect to learning standards. That one it seems pretty basic and obvious at some level, but it's interesting how difficult it can be to stay focused on actual academic standards and connected to what the learning targets are for the classrooms. You see the note there, goals in this area should not focus on student behavior. That happens sometimes. People want to write goals that address things like attendance, tardies, percentage of homework completed, on-time task assignment completion, etc. But what we really want teachers to do is to delve into their content, delve into their learning standards, and identify specific things that kids need to know and be able to do as a part of their class. Then we also can dig into those ideas from the instructional core. Address curriculum complexity. You can also address curriculum flexibility for learners of different backgrounds, differentiating for kids that already know the material and need to have enriched experiences, or kids that have gaps in their learning and understanding, and we need to provide remediation for them. Another component of student growth goals is, what does the teacher want to do to improve his or her instructional practices? And that can involve anything from embedding more reflective practices into their work, connecting with professional learning communities or collaboration with team members, or going to trainings of some kind that are targeted to support the learning in their classroom. And the third area, again, connected, or the fourth area, excuse me, again, connected with that instructional core is to increase the responsibility of the student. And that has been an interesting conversation in our school. Some teachers have very open, democratic classrooms, and other teachers have been more teacher-directed classrooms, both of which are good strategies. But it has really opened up some ideas and conversation and collaboration in our building. What does it look like to increase the responsibility of the student as learner? How do we do that effectively in our classroom? The kind of structural components of the teacher-student growth goals are in three areas. There are eight criteria that the state has written into law for teacher evaluation, and three of those criteria specifically have a component that connects to student growth. The way they break down is that the teachers need to write one goal for a whole classroom. So some teachers are looking at a classroom over the course of one instructional unit. Some teachers are looking at it over the course of an entire semester, and some teachers are looking at it over the course of the entire year. But it's something that all kids need to know, to learn, and be able to do, and the teachers need to demonstrate a change in understanding on the part of every single student in their classroom from the beginning of the time period to the end of the time period. So, again, the first component is that there has to be a whole classroom goal. What I encourage the teachers to do for this next part, the small group goal, is to identify a group of students that need to learn that whole classroom goal differently. One example of what to do for the small group goal might be to take a group of students who are struggling in class and have some gaps in their learning and identify what type of remediation or reteaching needs to happen in order for the students to be successful on the whole classroom goal. So the small group goal just has some additional supports built into it that will help that small group of struggling learners connect and be successful on the whole classroom goal. Another idea for the small group goal might be to take a group of students who have already mastered the material and develop an enrichment activity that might allow them to deepen or extend their knowledge into new areas that they don't already have mastery over. The third component of teacher-student growth goals is the collaboration goal. And again, I encourage my teachers to take their whole classroom goal and their small group goal to their colleagues to get input and guidance and suggestions into how best to help all kids accomplish those goals. So in essence, instead of writing three separate goals, teachers are writing one goal with three components to it. The principal student growth goals are similar, but in contrast, the teachers are looking specifically at their classroom, and of course the principals are looking at the entire school. So this is the actual language from the principal evaluation rubrics that describes how principals are expected to write goals and be evaluated with regards to student learning. The first element, again there are three, the first element is that principals are expected to analyze the achievement of all or most of the students in the school. What I always like to address at that when it says achievement of all or most of the students in the school, I feel it's my responsibility as the principal to ensure that we're looking at more than just test score data. So, for example, we look at grades. We look at midterm and final semester grades. We look at how well we know our students. We ask questions such as, do I know this student's post-high school plans? Do I know at least one personal interest of this student? Do I know what activities this child is involved in? And then we use that information that we know based on their personal interests to compare to grades and test score data. We also make sure that we're looking at equity issues when it comes to achievement. So we look at things such as how do students that are from low-income families compare when it comes to achievement and grades to students from non-low-income families. How well are we doing with our special education population at opening as many doors as possible for them? What's the difference for students who've been in our school district since kindergarten? How do they perform versus students who move in and have been here for two or fewer years? Is there a difference in achievement? We would hope that kids that are able to stay with us for the long term achieve to higher levels, but it's really important to look at the information and look at multiple sources of information in order to make decisions based on what's best for our kids and what changes we need to make to our school system. So that's kind of the big picture on the first bullet there regarding what we need to do regarding analyzing achievement for all or most of the students in our school. The second element for principal student growth goals listed there says this: analyze the achievement of students assigned to a subset of teachers that a principal identifies. So this is similar to what the teachers are doing. We need to then identify a subset of teachers that we want to look at more carefully. In most high schools, there are multiple administrators, and so the subsets can be pretty obvious. For example, I evaluate half of the teachers at the high school. The assistant principal evaluates half of the teachers at the high school. So it might make sense for my subset to be the teachers that I evaluate. It could also be if, for example, we had just adopted new math textbooks, it might make sense that my subset would be my math teachers because we were implementing new instructional materials. So there just has to be some logic and reasoning behind the choice of subset that a principal makes, and then that there is a lot of freedom in how we move forward with that. Similar types of data analysis would happen at the subgroup level, and hopefully it would be connected to what we were doing at the whole school level with regards to achievement. The third bullet, analyze subsets of the student population that are identified for the purpose of closing achievement gaps between them and the student population as a whole. That connects directly to equity and closing the achievement gap, obviously. Criterion 8 for principals is all about closing the achievement gap. And so we are compelled, legally and morally, as far as I'm concerned, to look at equitable practices for all kids in our school. And that is something that now, as a result of the new legislation, all principals across the state not only have to be doing because it's the right thing to do, but will be evaluated on it annually. As we think about this further, one of the things that is interesting about the student growth, the structural component of student growth inside the evaluation system, is that there are two different components of the score for the evaluation. The first is how well principals and teachers actually write goals. The second component, of course, is how well those goals and to what degree those goals are achieved. In my work as a principal and as a teacher, I would say that the people that struggle the most in education, oftentimes a component of that struggle is lack of time or lack of energy in the preparation or planning component of teaching and learning. And so as I've worked with my teachers on writing their student growth goals, this has kind of been my mantra. We should take the time to write high-quality goals and ensure together that the written goals will meet the standard for proficient or distinguished. When I say proficient or distinguished, that refers to the level of the rubric for evaluation of principals and teachers. Proficient or distinguished are the level 3 and level 4 scores on a four-tiered scale for the evaluation. What I'm really saying there is that sometimes what we really need to do is to invest our time and energy in planning and writing, in this case, writing high-quality goals, because everybody that I work with in education wants to do quality work. And most people that I know, when they take the time to write a goal for themselves or their school, they're going to take the time and effort it requires to implement that goal. So I'm a firm believer in taking the time to write high-quality goals that meet a high standard per the rubric. If we plan appropriately and efficiently, student learning is bound to improve. It takes focus, it takes determination, and it takes evidence. So my job as the principal when I'm working with teachers is to sit down and have conversations with the teachers about their goals and to ask them clarifying questions about how they determined which area that they needed to have as a focus for their goal, what evidence they considered, what types of measures they would look at to determine whether students were learning and to what degree, and to help them really think through every aspect of student learning in their classroom. Likewise, as a principal, I want my superintendent or my supervisor to sit down with me and ask me guided questions that get me to think more deeply about the areas in my school where students are achieving to high levels, and to figure out why we're being successful in certain areas, and also to take a look at areas that perhaps we might not be scoring quite as well, so that we can improve and address our deficit areas. The vast majority of teachers who struggle and principals who struggle, again, I would say is because of poor planning skills. Writing high-quality goals and building in support structures will help set things in motion that will improve teaching and learning. Okay, so this is my contact information. I'm going to go back up just a little bit of a slide, and then I'll put that back up for you. One other thing that I wanted to address before I get to your questions, and I've noticed a few really good ones popping up. I think that one of the biggest changes that I want people to be thinking about when they write their classroom goals is to think about what they want their kids to know and how it's connected to a standard. The other thing that's really important for people to think about is what does the rubric actually say? Because I've had a lot of teachers that I've worked with who've written really great goals and developed wonderful projects, but they haven't referenced the rubric that the state has put out for us, and therefore their goals are not adequate. The elements of the goal have to address not just the learning standard, but they have to address how the learning will be assessed, multiple measures, more than just one, and also over a time period. So they have to show a beginning time period and an ending time period. And so it's just like anything else. We as teachers and principals need to pay attention to how we're assessed so we can be set up for success. So with that.
Thank you, Whitney.
Yeah.
We'll move into our Q&A. And,
okay.
Thank you all for writing in questions, and please continue to do so if you have them. It looks like the first question we had was regarding one of the measurements for a principal evaluation. Your slide indicated that principals evaluate student achievement, and Sean was wondering, why don't the principals actually analyze growth instead of achievement?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question. All I can say is that I didn't write the language of the rubrics. The state and the different agencies involved in that did. I think there's a facet of our society, a large facet of our society probably, that really values achievement data. They value those test scores. And so I personally don't ever want to say that we don't analyze achievement. I just want to make sure we're looking at other measures as well. So I do think from the principal perspective and when we're looking at overall accomplishment of a school, we all know that schools are judged based on test scores. So whether we like that or not, that's something that we definitely have to take into consideration. It doesn't have to be the only thing that we use to evaluate our schools or that we use to look at evaluation for principals. I know for me personally, I want my superintendent to see not just test scores but other things as well. I just can't discount the achievement scores.
Thank you. Another question from a participant is asking if you could talk about some of the longitudinal assessment methods that are used to measure student growth.
That's an interesting question. So I have two thoughts on that. First of all, one of the things that teachers and principals have been very clear on is that they want each year's evaluation to be based on the work that they do during that year. So they want to be able to show, this is what the work I've done with my kids or with as a principal with my staff from September till June of this year. So that's not usually what we think about when we talk about longitudinal data. That being said, I think that there are other ways that schools and principals and teachers look at data and how it changes over multiple years. And we do that through strategic planning and school improvement processes. And those types of things are incorporated into our evaluation of our staff members as well. But if you want to look specifically at longitudinal data within one school year, the law allows us to use state-level measures, district-level measures, school-created measures as well as classroom teacher-created measures for that type of evaluation. So in some cases, I know in some schools they do things like MAP testing or benchmark assessments for reading and mathematics, where they will assess kids over time and show their growth and progress within one school year. Other teachers use, for example, a writing teacher might use multiple types of expository essays throughout the year and show how kids' writing levels improve within that school year. You can also do that over the course of many years. It's just not how teachers want to be evaluated for their formal evaluation, if that makes sense. So I hope I answered that question.
Thanks. And our last question was asking about, you mentioned a lot about planning ahead of time for teachers and principals, but what do some of those high-quality goals look like in different grade levels? And Melissa asked specifically about first grade, but maybe you could also share a middle school goal or a high school goal.
Sure. So one of the things, I have a little protocol that I take my teachers through, and I've actually used it with K-12 teachers. And I would say for first grade, most of the teachers that I work with that teach regular classroom kiddos in elementary, most of the teachers are either picking a content area of reading or math. That seems to be the most common. And most teachers will then take a look at the standards. Let's just say they picked a math goal. The teachers would take a look at the standards for first grade. They would identify a learning standard in mathematics that kids needed to master, and they would write a goal that would enable all kids to meet the standards connected with math for first grade. Then they would dig in a little further and identify a specific time period that they would be working on that and specific measures that would show what do the kids know at the start of this unit, what are they learning during the unit, and what's the final assessment that shows that all of the kids have mastered the content. I'm a high school person, so I apologize. I don't know the math standards for first grade very well. But most first grade teachers, when they understand that, they just have to identify the learning material that the kids need to do, the time period, and the different assessments. They can put that together pretty quickly. In middle school and high school, I had a middle school language arts teacher who she wasn't satisfied with the way the kids were performing on the seventh grade writing assessment, the state assessment. And so she took a look at the STRAND data report for our school that showed the kids were doing well in these parts of the assessment but not doing well in others. And she designed her planning for this year with writing specifically targeted the weak areas that our school has shown over the course of the last few years. And the kids are doing more writing to address those content areas. And then she will collect multiple essays from students throughout the year to show their learning. It really varies. I have a high school band teacher who has the kids self-assess themselves on every piece of music that they perform as they practice as they are preparing for adjudication in the spring. And they have an ongoing chart on the bulletin board that shows kind of by like 10 measure sections, are they performing at a 1, 2, 3, or 4, so they can see how they're getting to mastery. And then he talks to the kids about how they know whether they're a 1, 2, 3, or 4 on that piece of the music.
Very cool. Whitney, thank you so much for all of your tangible expertise today. And folks, if you still have questions for Whitney, please feel free to email me, Maggie@educationvoters.org, or you can contact Whitney. She's put up some contact information on the presentation for us. Don't forget, if you missed parts of the presentation today or you'd like to download the slides, they're available on our website at educationvoters.org. Our next webinar will be held on January 9th with a special introduction to the legislative session by our Director of Government Relations, Frank Orgway. Also, don't forget to mark your calendars for January 25th. It's LEB's fourth annual activist training titled Access, Equity, and Excellence. Have a great holiday season, and we'll see you in 2014.